And welcome to This Green Earth. I'm Claire Wiley, and joining me now is Nikki Sharp, who is the U.S. Executive Director of Wildlife SOS. Thank you so much for being a part of This Green Earth today, Nikki.
And thank you, Claire, for having me on your show.
Well, I want to learn more about you and the organization that you represent. So let's get started with the organization first and then your path into this type of work. So tell us about Wildlife SOS.
So Wildlife SOS is a nonprofit that is focused on saving wildlife in India. And we have several different species that we focus on right now. We work with Asian elephants. We work with four species of bears. People are often surprised to hear that there are bears in India, but there are four different species. Mm-hmm. And we work a lot with big cats as well, like tigers and leopards.
You often hear about tigers when you think of India and the peril that they are in. And we had spoken a little bit earlier about animals in captivity, and you had alluded to some dancing bear issues. Can you tell us about what is happening with the bears? What species of bear is most likely to get into that interaction with a human, and what is happening with the dancing bears?
So Wildlife SOS actually got started with one big focus, and that was to bring an end to dancing bears in India. It is a practice that had existed for hundreds of years. And two people, Geeta and Kartik, who are the co-founders of Wildlife SOS, they were determined that this come to an end, and they put together a plan, and it was a 10-year plan to bring an end to what had existed for hundreds of years. And at the time, there were about 1,000 dancing bears on the streets. Now, these bears are sloth bears, so it's okay. One of those eight species mm-hmm. of bears. So all the bears that were being used to dance in India were sloth bears, and they were being taken as cubs, so they were being poached at a very young age, probably just a couple of weeks old. Then they were sold on the market, and they had their noses pierced, still as just a few weeks old. And then from that point on, they lived at the end of the rope. And what would happen is people would pull on the rope, and the bears, in pain, would stand on their hind legs. And standing on their hind legs, they would move side to side, and someone would play like music, and they would call this a dancing bear. So this is what had gone on as entertainment for emperors hundreds of years ago, but it continued with mostly tourists. So tourists paid to see these dancing bears. So this program started basically in 2000, and by 2009, we reached our goal. All of the dancing bears in India had been rescued, and that was about 624. So at the time they started, there was over 1,000. Of course, some passed away. But this is considered one of the biggest, I think, environmental success stories of our time, is that a program that dealt with poverty, because a lot of people who did this lived in poverty. And so dealing with the poverty issues and helping the bears really showed a model that could work for helping other species.
Right. In turn, you're helping humans along the way as well, so that you can eradicate some of these behaviors, because it maybe derives from someone that needs a living and needs to make money. So that's understandable. So if you get to the root of problems, sometimes we can all heal from this. So with the dancing bears, I love that this is a success story. There's 600, you said, or so. Where do they go after they are rescued?
So that was part of the challenge when the program first started. It was like, okay, if we start helping these bears, the organization had no place to put them. So several things had to be figured out. So the Wildlife SOS ended up working with the government to get some land, started doing a little bit of fundraising, and with that, the bears, when they were rescued, came to Wildlife SOS. We hired veterinarians, and they learned so much about what these bears needed for their rehabilitation, because they had so many problems in their muzzles and their eyes and being malnourished their whole life. And so we hired veterinarians to help these bears. And at the same time, as you just pointed out, Claire, this would not have worked unless we had the support of the people who had been dancing the bears. And so this was a kind of a gypsy group. They'd moved from place to place to show off their bears. And we gave them training in a whole new vocation. So we took the bears, we cared for the bears, and if you were to see the bears now, the bears are just so happy. They have trees that they climb, they have friends that they hang out with, and the bears, I think, have a really fantastic life.
Mm. Because when you're in captivity like that, just being reintroduced back into the wild is really not an option for many species because you're kind of setting them up to fail if their entire life has not been spent learning these survival skills. So you do afford them these simulated wild spaces so they can utilize their instincts and go back into a world similar to what they would know in the wild, but that they are equipped to handle. And they don't have to worry about some of those survival skills they would need in the wild, but they can still lean into their animal instincts.
You're absolutely right. So we do want to encourage natural behaviors for these bears. So up until this time, they've never been able to climb trees. Soft bears love to dig for termites, so this is an opportunity for them to start learning to dig for termites and have fun with that. So a lot of the behaviors that you see with the bears now at our facility are behaviors that they were deprived of ever showing up until this time. And they are given areas that kind of meet their needs. Some of the bears that we get are blind, and so we have to have special enclosures that really address the fact that they cannot see to get around. And so we have special groups of bears who are blind. And then with that, we have special people who are trained just to work with those blind bears.
Incredible. And this is located in India, this space. And what part of India is the Wildlife SOS grounds?
So for the bears, we are right outside of Agra, which most people will associate with the Taj Mahal. So we're about, I think, 20 miles outside of the Taj Mahal. But of course, with India traffic, it'll take you about an hour and a half to get there from the Taj Mahal. But we are pretty close to that, that wonder of the world.
Oh, fantastic. Well, you protect several different species, as you had talked about, and you have another program where you're working with some captive elephants. Can you describe to me that program and where it's at right now, that project?
Sure. So around the time we were getting close to rescuing the last dancing bear in India, which was the end of 2009, because the organization had built up so many different relationships across the country to manage this problem, we started getting calls about other issues that people wanted help with. And at the same time, we ourselves started seeing more and more what were captive begging elephants around the Taj Mahal. And we started thinking, okay, we need to do something now to help these elephants in India, because there really was no other organization helping captive elephants in India. So since 2009, we have pivoted pretty much in a major way to start helping India's elephants. And we're helping both the captive elephants as well as elephants that are still in the wild. But in terms of our captive elephant program, we've gone on to build the first elephant ambulance.
Oh, wow.
So if an elephant collapses or has serious injuries and needs to be brought somewhere where we can care for them, we have an elephant ambulance. And I think actually we just launched our second ambulance. It's great to have these. It's bad that there's a need for these. But we also built India's first elephant hospital, too. So once we pick up these elephants, we bring them to the hospital and they get care. And since we started this program, we've rescued over 50 elephants. Now, our goal, like the dancing bear, is not to just keep bringing in elephants where there's no end in sight. We actually want to see an end to this problem. So we are launching a lot of different projects that really work to help address how elephants are being kept in captivity and to try to change some of the regulations that allow elephants to be kept in such a way. And a lot of this is education in India, and part of it is education for people who visit India.
Right. There is a maybe misunderstanding for tourists when they go there. It really lies with the tourists giving the money to these programs. So how do you create a deterrent from tourists for doing this?
So I think the big issue here is education. I think when I talk to people and I tell them, hey, I work with elephants in India, people get really excited and they want to tell me how much they love elephants. And they're like, oh, someday I hope to go there and ride one. And that's an opportunity to educate somebody. Because really, if you love elephants, you don't want to ride them, because what's happening to those elephants, every elephant you see that's being held in captivity was born in the wild. So once people understand that they've come into captivity because of that demand for people to have these opportunities, they think twice about, do I really want to support that? So a big part of what we're doing is just educating people so they understand what's happening to that elephant that they love so much. And I think that's the first step, is the education. And we have a campaign that's called Refuse to Ride. And it's, I hope you don't mind if I give you a website, but it's refusetoride.org if people want to understand more about this campaign. But with this campaign, we are trying to be proactive to help people understand, when you go to India, we understand that you want to see elephants, but there are a lot of places you can go and see wild elephants. So we'd like to help people to make that choice instead of riding an elephant.
On the ground in India, how many people do you have helping you with your organization, and what does that outreach look like on the ground there?
Well, we have, in terms of staff in India, 404 people, I think is what I got the latest update. And people are kind of surprised, but so many of these people are being used just to provide quality care for these animals that we're rescuing, because you can't just rescue animals and put them in an enclosure and then turn your back and just put food in there. They need a lot of quality care. And so most of that team are people who are providing care for our bears, for our elephants, and then we have other animals that we have rescued as well. But in terms of the people who are working on more of the outreach, we do have a substantial team that's out there. We have veterinary teams that are part of this program called Hathi Seva, and that translates to in service to elephants. And they are going out not with an ambulance, but more like a clinic to bring care to elephants outside of our facility. And part of what they're doing is educating people of what those elephants need in order to have better welfare.
Mm. So are you seeing a shift in mindset as the years go by and you keep educating people? Are you seeing that slow shift to understanding that this is detrimental to this animal?
We are seeing that shift. And it takes time, and I think a lot of us who work in this area want things to happen a lot faster than they do. And so one of the things that we look at are, there are places that people go to ride elephants specifically to have an experience where they get on an elephant and ride it to a cultural treasure. And what we're seeing is that a lot of those places are no longer attracting the tourists that it once did. So the word is getting out, and that's part of the education to not just the individual, but also the travel companies. And so people are being a little bit more savvy, like, we want to go, but we don't want to ride elephants, so make sure that where we go, we are not having that experience. So we are seeing definitely fewer and fewer people demanding that. And with that, too, we're seeing some other countries like taking action to start banning it in some areas. And so I think that's a reflection of the cultural shift that's happening, where people are more aware and they're asking the right questions.
And I love the idea of shifting maybe someone's vocation, that if this is what they've been doing, that it sounds like Wildlife SOS has other opportunities for people who have maybe been making a living in these ways or these fashions. Because to your point earlier, we have to think about the holistic part of what that issue might be. And we can't take out the human element of that.
So probably some of the most heartwarming videos we've ever done for our organization cover stories of people that we have hired who used to work in circuses or work with elephants or bears in ways that they were quite cruel. And they have learned new ways of interacting with the animals. And they think back on those times that they did not show kindness. And they have real regret. And part of what's beautiful is seeing them with learning new ways of working with the animals to like develop relationships with the animals that they're in charge of. Now, we don't just give people animals. We have to train them. Like, how do you work with the animals without hitting them? And one of my favorite stories is actually a film that's gotten several awards for documentaries. And it's the story of one of our mahouts. And that's a word for somebody who cares for an elephant who bonded with one of our blind elephants. Her name was Susie. And she would go on walks with him everywhere. And he would look to make sure that every step she took was a safe step. And he was with her from before the sun came up to after the sun went down. And the two of them had a very special relationship. And I think it goes to show what is possible.
We as humans do innately have a connection to the natural world. Mm-hmm. And we sometimes forget, or we pull ourselves away from it, or extract ourselves from that care that we can give to each other, because we are both important to the world and mm-hmm. our ecosystems. Mm-hmm. So what are some of your bigger goals for Wildlife SOS as you look to the future?
So as we look to the future, ultimately our big goal is to save India's elephants, because their numbers are falling. And the last 5 years, I think we've seen a decline of maybe 25% of what's in the wild. But there's a huge connection between the captive elephant situation and the wild elephant. So what we're really focused on right now is trying to address the demand for elephants being put into captivity. So we have a big campaign that is focused on saving all the begging elephants. Now, when I talk about begging elephants here in this country, people are a little bit perplexed what a begging elephant is. But it's basically an elephant that is privately owned, and they're rented out for different types of services, maybe for weddings, maybe for carrying heavy loads. But they are probably some of the worst kept elephants. Their feet is in terrible condition. I could go on quite a lot about the condition of these elephants, but I think what I like to convey is that we have identified about 300 of these elephants in India. And we're hoping in 5 years that we'll have all of these elephants off the streets through various programs that we're running. And we're building out our facility. We've bought 120 more acres.
Oh, wow.
And we have the capacity to take a lot of those elephants to our center. So with this campaign, we feel like this will be really, really great momentum for getting the actions that we want to see for all captive elephants in India, and really, really working to protect their wild cousins.
How do people get involved?
So everything as simple as just taking a pledge. So on that refusetoride.org website, we do have a pledge, and that's the first step we ask people to take, is just take a pledge that you will never ride elephants. And then after that, you can get more involved in different ways. In India, we do have a visitor and volunteer program where you can come out and work at our centers. Now, you don't really get to work directly with the animals, but it is really an opportunity. You can go out and learn a lot about these very, very unique animals. So these are opportunities that we have for people within the country if they'd like to have an adventure, but an adventure that is more an experience that really gives back to nature.
Sure. And your website is?
WildlifeSOS.org.
Fantastic. Well, we have been speaking with Nikki Sharp, who is the U.S. Executive Director of Wildlife SOS. And your headquarters are
in Salt Lake City.
In Salt Lake City. So if you want to learn more, go to WildlifeSOS.org, and you can learn more about this organization and what they are doing for the animals in India. Thank you so much. Is there anything else that you want our listeners to know about your organization or what you're doing?
Well, I just appreciate the time that you've had me on your show today. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate you, Nikki, and thanks for what you do. And we hope to see you again on This Green Earth.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to This Green Earth. If you have an idea, we'd love to hear from you. Give us your ideas and topics, your storylines. It's thisgreenearth@kpcw.org. You can also find us wherever you listen to your podcast. If you like the show and you learned something new, make sure you leave a review. And we'd appreciate it if you click 5 stars.